This is the Angry GM, and this is the final proofread aloud of the month of January. And it's actually been a month-long blitz into this whole true GMing series, which is not originally what I planned, but I need some space to figure out how to make my other content work, what with everything that's been going on in the OGL. So after this month, you're only going to see two articles in this series each month, and then there will be two other things. I definitely need to get back to doing rule hacks, and then there will be a fourth wild card article, which means it's allowed to roll wild dice, it can spend bennies, and it can take up to 3 wounds before it's taken off the battlefield. But none of that matters. What matters now is me reading the article that I have written to publish a week from now, which I had to get done early because I'm going away on a trip in just a couple of hours. So you won't see this article until next Tuesday, the 31st. But you can listen to it now. That's just one of the great benefits of being here live. The recording, of course, won't post until the 31st. So if you're listening to this recorded, then the article is already up and you can disregard absolutely everything else I've said. Anyway, so here we go with inviting the principal PC to act. This here's another lesson in my year-long True Game Mastery series. You don't have to read these in order, but you probably should. So if you're new here, maybe check out the series outline and start at the beginning. Welcome back, initiate of the way of the True Game Master. I didn't expect you back. Not after last time when I told you your imagination sucks, your lifestyle sucks, and fixing it's gonna suck too. But let's pretend you listened and now your scene-setting narration is buttery smooth. But the game does not run on that. Okay, there's two buts. Unfortunately is a good transition between those two sentences, so I don't have two buts. Nobody should have two buts. Okay, that's... Anyway, and I can't make Rick and Morty jokes right now because, you know. But let's pretend you listened and now your scene-setting narration is buttery smooth. Unfortunately, the game does not run on narration alone. Eventually, you have to let the players talk. And those idiots never clean the breadcrumbs off the knife before going for the butter dish. Heading: inviting the players to play. At its core, a tabletop role-playing game is a conversation. You, the game master, set the scene, and then you ask your player, And then you ask your players what they do about it. The players respond by describing their characters' actions, and you respond by telling the players how that works out for their characters, and round it goes. The part where you ask the players what their characters do, that's called inviting the players to act. True game masters are masters of pacing. They keep their tabletop role-playing game sessions moving, but players, they're not masters of anything. Think of your game's pace like a Fabergé egg, exquisitely beautiful and tragically delicate. You, the true game master, are a museum curator. You know how to handle priceless, delicate artifacts. The players, though, are like ferrets. They're hyperactive, destructive, and lack opposable thumbs. If you've managed to run at least one game, you've managed to invite the players to act. But if you're new at this crap, you probably did it by ending every bit of scene-setting narration with, what do you do? Or worse, that's what there is. And I'm sorry to say that true game masters have to do better than just trailing off and hoping someone will say something that sounds like an action. Especially when they run online games. Online games are where pacing goes to die. And every online game master knows the interminable silence that follows every, so what do you do? a silence you can only break by saying, "Am I still connected? Is anyone talking? Are you all muted?" Heading: talking to your players about their characters. If you don't want your game's pace to die, you need your players to respond quickly and clearly to every invitation to act. Getting the players to respondez-vous? It's all about how you address the invitation. Fortunately, it's easy to learn how to properly address your players. You just have to build a new habit. From now on, and forever hereafter, you are to talk to players and talk about characters. And when you're inviting a player to act, you do both in the same breath. Don't say, "Adam, what do you do?" Don't say, "What does Ardrick do?" Don't say, "Ardrick, what do you do?" Say, "Adam, what does Ardrick do?" Every freaking time. That is how you speak to your players. The habit's important, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but the mindset behind it is more important. It's not okay to say, "Adam, you take 10 points of damage. Ardrick, the fictional imaginary fighter, took that damage." So you say, "Ardrick takes 10 points of damage." And if you want Adam to actually mark that down like he's supposed to, you can get Adam's attention by saying, "Adam, Ardrick took 10 points of damage. I should see you scribbling on your character sheet." I know some GMs like to be coy and clever and think it's more immersive if they only use character names. And I know some GMs just can't be asked to care and just address players... And I know some GMs just can't be asked to care and just address whoever by whatever appellation falls out of their noise holes. But true game masters speak to players, and they speak about characters. The only time it's okay for you to directly address a character is when you're speaking ex charactera. That is, when you yourself are speaking as a character. "Hold, Ardrick," shouts the guard. "I cannot let your party pass." Now, this ain't a statement on the line between player and character. This isn't some trick to help people avoid personalizing the totally pretend crap that happens at the table. It's a pacing tool and a memory aid. And as a side benefit, it also helps maintain an immersive tabletop role-playing game experience, even though it looks like it doesn't. If you run tabletop role-playing game campaigns at real-life tables with actual humans, you know players spend the first session of every campaign making the list. You know the one I mean, the cheat sheet of party members' names. And as a result, every character's introduction gets interrupted with, "Wait, what was your name again? And hold on, how do you spell that?" And you know every in-character conversation thereafter is going to start with someone shuffling through their notes looking for the list. And you know they're going to give up and say, "I can't remember your character's name, Beth, but my character shows you the ruined parchment he pulled from the scroll case. Can you make anything of this?" Meanwhile, if you run tabletop role-playing games online, you're used to the silence. You know, the dead air that comes after you refer to a character by name as everyone tries to remember who the hell is playing Beryllia, and even Beth won't speak up because she can't remember her own freaking character's name. It takes people, not players, people, a long time to internalize fake names and alienesses. It takes them a long time to internalize female aliens, okay? It's not as simple as just getting an ovipositor rammed down your throat. Okay, it takes a long time. You know, buy flowers first, you know, a nice dinner, some foreplay. Sorry. Anyway, it takes people. I'm so sorry. And good night, everybody. Now let's try that again. It takes people, not players, people, a long time to internalize fake names and aliases, their own and their friends. And online, even if you're using a camera, you can't use pointed looks to cue Beth that you're talking to her. The list and the silence, They're small things. Small pacing killers. Individually, each eats up a fraction of a second. But they happen every time you pass the action to your players. And that happens a lot at every tabletop role-playing game session. And those pacing killers come when the pacing's most delicate, because they happen at the moment when description ends and action must begin. Once you've described the menacing ogre, everything's tense and everyone's on edge. They all want to get to fighting. The last thing you need is for the game to stall out while you try to grind the game's transmission into gear. It's a real pace killer. Pairing player and character names solves a bunch of problems at once. Players don't forget their own names. They know you're talking to them. And when you pair their name with their character's name, it reminds them who they are in the fiction. And it reminds everyone else, too. Moreover, it reminds the players, psychologically, that they're role-playing. That they're acting through an avatar in a fantasy world. It grounds them in the activity. Yes, I know that's counterintuitive, but it's still true. Talking to your players about their characters is an immersion aid in addition to being a pacing tool and a mnemonic trick. And it's a great example of the power of repetition. But now, let's have a little sidebar. I call this one Silence Equals Death. Great gameplay experiences and great narrative experiences require great pacing. And while pacing is actually a very complicated concept and refers to the ebb and flow of tension throughout an experience, there's one aspect of pacing that's so simple anyone can understand it. When an experience comes to a dead stop, the experience is dead. Silence is your arch nemesis. Nothing will kill your great game deader than silence. And players are great at silence. And this is why, as a true game master, you don't just have the right to demand your player's attention, you have a duty to demand it. When it's a player's turn to speak, if they don't speak immediately, they're killing your game. They're ruining your art and ruining everyone else's experience. So, ban cell phones, turn off the Wi-Fi, humiliate distracted players humiliate them mercilessly. Be kind about it. If they don't speak immediately, they're killing your game. They're ruining your art and ruining everyone else's experience. So, ban cell phones, turn off the Wi-Fi, humiliate distracted players mercilessly, and separate food time from game time. Do whatever you must. But no amount of banning and humiliation is as effective as just making it impossible to play the game without paying attention. If you want to demand your player's attention and force them to think between turns about their next action, make that the only way to play. When you invite a player to act, if that player doesn't immediately start talking, if they start consulting their character sheet, or if they emit a noise like, say, okay, I'll come back to you when you're ready. Until then, you're on hold. Then move on to someone else. Every time, without mercy. If a player responds to your invitation with anything other than an action or an intelligent, non-stalling question, skip them. After an inattentive player loses a few turns, they'll do whatever they have to do to make sure they're ready for their turn. Or they'll quit your game. Either way, you've solved the pacing problem. Heading: addressing by short desk. By talking to your players about their characters, habitually and consistently, you'll maintain a good, solid pace. But if you want to raise your pacing powers over 9,000, you need to master a trick I call short desking. It's short for short describing, but I ain't gonna explain where the name came from. Short desking is the habit of occasionally replacing a character's name with a short descriptive phrase. Let me demonstrate with an example. And this is one of those times where I wish I had video and sock puppets, because my voice work isn't as great. And I have three characters speaking and I don't just want to be GM. Adam. But anyway, I'll figure this out. Okay. So here I am. I'm the GM. Three hulking orcs bar your path, each a head over 6 foot tall. They're dressed in mismatched hide armor and armed with massive stone-headed mauls. Adam, What does Ardric do? I charge directly at the orc in the middle of the group and attack with my longsword. Ardric charges. Attack at +2. I hit AC 15 for 7 slashing damage. The knight charges the group, catching the brutes off guard. Clearly, they expected the party to hesitate. The orc tries to backpedal, but to no avail. Ardric's sword opens a long gash in the green-skinned barbarian's ribs. Before the orcs can lay into the human swordsman, though, Beth, what does Beryllia do? She takes cover behind the tree and casts Shroud of Frost at the orc to Adam's left. It gets a fortitude save, DC 12. Okay, the orc fails. That's 10 frost damage, and the orc is slowed for 1 round. The amber-eyed elf darts for safety behind the tree, then clutches a fist as she speaks her words of power. As the savage orc raises his maul to strike, icy mist coalesces around him, hardening into a patina of frost. He struggles to breathe, but he's already begun to attack the swordsman in front of him. Ardric takes 15 crushing damage. I'm bloodied. The knight staggers back, his breastplate dented and a rib beneath cracked painfully. He turns aside a second attack with his shield. The third orc, though, spies the mage hiding behind the tree. Bachrin, witch! He snarls and dashes at her. That's a true game master right there. Of course he is. He's me, and he's a handsome devil, too. And he changes up how he refers to the characters frequently. He uses character names often enough that they don't get forgotten, but he also uses descriptive phrases like the knight, or the amber-eyed elf, or the savage. That's short desking. The benefits of short desking. Short desking helps you mitigate the fact that tabletop role-playing gamers, tabletop role-playing game players, can't actually see what's going on in the game's world. Instead, they see a table and dice and papers. Sure, they can see minis and pictures too, if you've got them, but that's still a sucky substitute for the visuals in a movie or video game. See, the problem is that players, and their imaginations, and yours, are flighty things. They forget anything they're not reminded of constantly. Even the terrible in-game monsters fade into abstract clouds of game stats if you let them. Short desks are constant reminders that there are actual creatures doing actual things in an actual fantasy world, and that the players are wearing different skins in the fantasy world. That's helpful because the players frequently forget their unshaven, hairy-armed buddy is playing a graceful, ageless elven minstrel with a lilting, sing-song voice. Hell, in the heat of the game's most mechanical moments, players tend to forget that they themselves are playing stalwart and humorless bearded dwarf clerics or half-demons or whatever. This skin forgetting is a huge pain in the ass if you're trying to establish a strong sense of actual fantasy, because actual fantasy relies heavily upon, among many other things, very strong, very consistent non-human racial identities. Without them, the world is just a comic book world of funny-looking superpowered dudes and dudettes, no two of which are alike. You need to make elves feel like elves and orcs feel like orcs and all the rest. This means never letting anyone forget that there are elves and orcs in a scene, and not just people with superpowers on a character sheet. Short desking also encourages you to respond to the characters the way the world should. By reminding yourself Adam's fighter is a hereditary knight and Beth's mage is a haughty, aloof elf, you're also reminding yourself that innocent peasants should defer to Ardric, and the dwarven clansmen should sneer at Beryllia over millennia-old racial disputes between the races. I guess I don't need to say racial disputes between the races because that's redundant and repetitive and redundant. And the dwarven clansmen should sneer at Beryllia over millennia-old racial disputes. And beyond all that, short desking makes for more interesting, more evocative narration. It just sounds better. Generating short desks. Generating short desks. Short desking is at its best when it sounds natural. And that comes from, that naturalness comes from knowing your PCs and NPCs well enough to describe them. Good short desking starts the moment players introduce their characters. Take notes, Keep a list of features for each PC. Note not just their class, but their apparent place in the world. Some fighters are knights, some are soldiers, and some are thugs. Note their race and physical appearance, their arms and armor and equipment. And as the game plays out, note the skills they reveal at the table. Don't default to or rely on game terms. Don't call a fighter wizard a wizard or mage unless the PC really is a spellcaster who sometimes pulls a sword. Call them a sword mage or a spell sword instead. Treat coming up with evocative ways to describe the PCs as a game, a fun challenge for a true master of the game. And when you create NPCs, even if they're total mooks, name them descriptively. Never put a goblin or a spider in your game. Use goblin skulks, who are different from goblin skirmishers, or bristling cave spiders. And never say halfling when you can say Ango, halfling merrymaker, instead. Heading: never, ever speak to everyone. Let's put short desking aside and talk about pacing. To keep your game running at a good pace, always speak to the players about their characters, especially when you're handing off the action. Let me add another rule, though. Whenever you're handing off the action to a player, you must hand it to a specific player. You are never ever to say, "What do you all do?" You are never to sweep your gaze across the table, taking in all your players, and say, "What now?" Your game's pace is like a Fabergé egg. No, I'm not dropping that analogy. I'm going to extend it. Whoever is talking is in control of the game's pace. They're holding the Fabergé egg. And when you're handing off that egg, you don't toss it to the ground in the party's midst. That's a great way to break a priceless piece of art. And even if the egg doesn't break, there are only a couple of ways for things to play out. Either several players all grab for the egg and you're stuck waiting for the dust to settle, or everyone stares at the egg waiting for someone else to make a grab for it. Those are bad outcomes at any table, but online, they're both nightmares. When people talk over each other on a voice over internet platform, you can't hear anything. And when everyone hangs back and waits for someone else to talk first, the silence stretches forever because there are no visible signs of deference or overtures towards speaking that signal permission to talk. The point is that you never, ever toss a Fabergé egg at a group of players hoping someone will catch it. You hand it to a specific person. In the days of yore, tabletop role-playing game groups got around this crap by designating one player as the caller. The caller was like the oracle at Delphi. He received the game master's holy words, passed them to his fellows to discuss, reached a consensus, and offered up that consensus to the game master for approval and resolution. And like the oracle at Delphi, that idea is so last millennium. It's a sucky solution, and it doesn't solve the problems inherent in online communication. Enter the principal character. Heading: the principal character. That's such a lame transition. The next section will be called the principal character. The principal character. Okay, I'm just going to make it enter. Enter, dot, 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 heading, the principal character. Okay, that actually works. Okay. In every scene, in every encounter, in every situation, you must shine a spotlight on a single player's character. That character, whose identity changes from scene to scene and even from one moment to the next, is the principal character. And when you must invite the players to act, you only ever invite the principal character's player to act. How do you determine which character is the principal character? Well, sometimes it's easy. Sometimes there are initiative rules. Sometimes there's only one character in a scene. But it's not always so clear. The principal character is the one in the best position to act, given the situation. When the party comes to an intersection and must choose a direction, the principal character is the one in the lead. When the party notices signs of an ambush, the principal character is whoever made their awareness check. When one of the characters is suddenly and mysteriously struck down by a magical trap, the principal character is whoever happens to be standing closest to the smoking boots. The point isn't to put one character in control of the party, and often the caller ended up a de facto party leader, but it's just to designate who gets to speak next. Often, the principal character won't take unilateral action. Instead, they'll say something like, "Which way should we go?" or "We should follow the stream to the left. What do you all think?" They'll start a conversation. That's fine. Perfect. And sometimes the player will freeze up. That's okay. You can always take back the Fabergé egg and hand it to someone else by saying something like, "Okay, seeing her ally reduced to a fine pink mist has left Beryllia in shock. Chris, what does Cabe do?" And that's good because it means you literally can't screw this up. It doesn't actually matter who you designate as the principal character. The point is just to put the Fabergé egg carefully into a specific player's hands. Anyone will do, so don't sweat it. Just trust your gut and pick whoever makes the most sense to you. Heading: players are still ferrets. However carefully you hand off the delicate, priceless treasure that is your tabletop role-playing game adventure's pace, you're still handing it to a thumbless, hyperactive rodent. And no, you cannot teach the players how to handle pacing. No true game master would ever suggest such a thing. Instead, you have to be ready to catch the pacing egg when it falls. Unlike you, the players will just dump that egg on the ground. When Ardric says, "Which way should we go, guys?" he's tossing that Fabergé egg on the ground and hoping someone else will pick it up. And you've got to dive in there, catch it, and carefully hand it to the next principal character. Fortunately, it's as easy as saying, "Ardric asks you all which way to go. Chris, how does Cabe respond?" I know that seems weird and awkward and stilted and unnatural, but it's basically just a bunch of resolution narration followed by an invitation to act. Technically, when Adam says, "Which way should we go?" he's actually declaring an action. He's actually saying, "Ardric asks the party aloud, which way should we go?" Or maybe, "Ardric asks his allies which way to go." As the game master, it's your job to resolve that action. Ardric succeeds in asking the party for their navigational opinions, and then invite the principal character's player to act. Chris, what action does Cabe take as a result? This crap won't always be necessary. Often when one player dumps the egg, another will catch it, especially if the party has had some time to build some real-life camaraderie. So you can safely wait for a half beat after the dumbass player drops the egg to see if someone catches it. But if no one does, dive in there and get it before it hits the ground. And this trick, catching the egg and handing it off, works whenever an awkward silence settles over the game. Just describe whatever just happened as if you're resolving an action, and then invite the principal character's player to act. Does my character know anything about these creatures? I'm trained in monsterology. Yes, Beth. Beryllia recognizes the creatures as crimson death slugs. They secrete a deadly poison that causes near-instant paralysis. Those who succumb start to suffocate immediately because they can't breathe. Even a single drop of careless spatter that lands on the skin is deadly, such as might happen in melee combat. Fortunately, they're vulnerable to fire damage. Beth, Beryllia recognized the creatures from her studies. Does she share that information with her allies? Yes. Beryllia quickly warns you all the slugs are deadly to touch or even to engage in close combat, but are vulnerable to fire. Adam, Ardric is at the head of the party. What does he do? Shit. Ardric is clearly terrified of the slugs. Fortunately, he's wearing his brown pants. Chris, what does Cabe do? The slugs are creeping toward the party. Heading, now practice. You've got plenty to practice now, and practice you must. That's how to build true game mastering habits. Practice speaking to your players about their characters, and practice addressing the principal character's player directly at all times. Practice replacing character names with short, descriptive phrases in your narration. And if you catch yourself screwing up, correct yourself mentally. Think, "No, I only talk to players. I talk about characters." Or think, "That was wrong. I should always hand my pacing egg to a specific player." It'll take time and deliberate effort to get this crap right. And given you're also probably working on your imaginary lifestyle, I'm going to give you 2 weeks before the next lesson in this course. So fill that time with plenty of gaming practice. And that was the proof read aloud. I hope you all enjoyed it. I'm away for a week, though if you're listening to the recording, you won't hear that until I'm already back. But otherwise, I will have a new article for you in 2 weeks.